Hey, hey, welcome back to the Razzball Podcast. This is your host, Ralph Lifshitz. Another week here on the show, we keep on hammering through these positional ranks. It's the gospel according to one Gray Albright, the man, the myth, the legend, a.k.a. Fantasy Master Lothario, a.k.a. Tout Wars champion, reigning champion, NL only. What's going on, my man? How's it going?
Man. Chilling. Yeah, I was, you know, what's funny with the, I did a Aaron Judge overrated post today. We'll get into him shortly when we go over the outfielders, but these, the overrated posts always get the most pushback. People don't like the overrated posts. I tell you, I mean, some do. I mean, I think they like them depending on your definition of like, but people don't want to, they're not having the overrated talk when they like a player. Like, it doesn't even matter. Like, if you were to put actual, you know, facts down on virtual paper, just overrated. If someone likes someone and you call them overrated, they just are not hearing it. It just doesn't matter.
Absolutely. No, you're totally right. I think I got on you last year about Daniel Murphy, but the problem is you're...
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not saying I'm flawless. I'm not infallible. I'm not thesaurus, help me out here, you know? I'm not without the flaws. But, I mean, you got to be able to... You got to, like, look at... You got to have both eyes open when you're looking at some of these things. Like, you know, okay, you may not agree, but to say, like, oh, you know, like... Aaron Judge isn't overrated because of the home run derby, and you know, that's going to be in the rear view, and his shoulder's all healed. It's like, dude, come on, man. I mean, that's you're saying, or my favorite is Giancarlo is going to help him maintain focus. What? Come on. Like, that's just ridiculous. Giancarlo is not going to – I mean, Giancarlo seems like a wonderful human being, and I love him with all my heart and every other body part that he wants. But Giancarlo is not helping Aaron Judge become a better player. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. It's such anecdotal. Like, okay, sure. Giancarlo. Just like Giancarlo helped – Osuna for 3 years, and then suddenly he broke out last year. Would Giancarlo help him a little bit more last year? I mean, it's like, what are you talking about? It's like the most ridiculous thing.
He did. He became Osuna's personal hitting coach, and they unlocked a beautiful Apollo Creed Rocky type of Balboa sort of romance.
It's like with Yelich. I guess Giancarlo helped Yelich 2 years ago, but then last year he decided not to help him. So he backpedaled a little bit on his stats because it's all Giancarlo related. Everything that goes on in the world through the prism of the narrative that Giancarlo is going to help Aaron Judge. Giancarlo does it all.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like it's your world, you know. Everything revolves around Giancarlo. But I would say,
you know what? I wasn't feeling the Sopranos finale. Giancarlo could have done a little bit better there. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, don't stop believing, really, Giancarlo. I don't know, man.
Wow, you're really going with the current references now, Gray? Huh? Sopranos finale. Okay.
He did. I wasn't really feeling this weekend. I went to see Annihilation. And let me just say, I got no clue. It's like one of those movies like Inception where you come out of it and you're like, I think I liked it, but I'm not really 100% sure if I even know what was going on for half of it. I don't know if I liked it. And I don't know what it was going on enough to know if I liked it. It was like one of those things.
I'm so out of touch with movies. I don't even know which one that is.
That's why I was bringing the Sopranos reference, because you didn't get my other references.
I can play off it pretty good, though. But hey, I wanted to say though, when it comes to your Schmohawks posts, you certainly hit more than you miss on those. I don't have the stats in front of me. I actually want to go back and look at this, but I'd be willing to bet that you probably hit 70% or better on those. That's probably, you hit those more than you hit your sleepers, and you hit your sleepers a fair amount. But I would say that that's one of the best things you do, is when you start to, after you dig through these guys, you rank them. And, you know, go through that whole process, then you put out these Schmohawk posts. You typically hit. And it's not like you hate Aaron Judge. We're about to go over to the outfielders today. You have him ranked 10th.
Yeah, that's
what I'm
saying. I mean, like that's what, you know, like in the end of the day, like I don't really like or dislike any players. I loved Aaron Judge last year when he was going for like 220 overall in drafts. Like I was like, I owned Aaron Judge last year when he was cheap as shit. But I mean, I just think he's overrated this year. It's not a matter of whether I like Aaron Judge or not. I mean, it's like any of these players. The only player really that I feel like, you know, I didn't want to like dislike as much as I did. And like Daniel Murphy, like I enjoyed not liking him last year. Like I did. And I feel like I might have enjoyed it a little too much because then he ended up biting me in the ass. Sure. Not literally because he's a homophobe, but yeah, I mean, you know,
we get to the root of the issue.
I didn't really like Daniel Murphy as a person while disliking him for fantasy. I kind of across the board just didn't like him. But I learned my lesson with, you know, he fooled me. Fool me once. You know what they say. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, a lot of people think that really actually annoys me. Like at some point during the offseason, someone was like, oh, you're such like a Dodger homer or something. Like, what are you even talking about?
You're
like,
so team agnostic. I
know. I am like so agnostic with teams. Like I really love Cody Bellinger, but I hate Corey Seager. So it's like, how do I dislike Corey Seager, who is like basically the face of the franchise. And I hate Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah. You never draft Kershaw.
I've never drafted Kershaw.
Not a Justin Turner fan. I'm just trying to find out where the homerism is. Like I think
I know,
you just like Cody
exactly.
Bellinger.
Yeah.
Watch him swing a bat and you'll get it. Like, come on.
No, it was like, huh? Like, wait, what? Like I'm a Dodger homer because I happen to think Cody Bellinger can repeat last year, and also I kind of like Rich Hill and Alex Wood for their price. I feel like they're kind of like, you know, worth it. I'm actually higher on Chris Turner than Chris Taylor than I thought I would be, but it wasn't because I like the Dodgers. I just think he's got there's some bargain there with Chris Taylor.
They know your zip code, they attach it to you. And it's funny, 'cause like, you know, I obviously get the Red Sox homer thing. I'm more of a Red Sox fan than you are a fan of any team, because I, you know, grew up here. I still live here, but I don't like live and breathe with a team any longer. I've certainly moved away from that. The more I've gotten into writing, I cheer for players now. I cheer for my teams, and I have a soft spot for the Dodgers. I don't think people even pick up on that. I've mentioned it like 1,000 times. I'm probably more of like a Dodgers Bobo in believing in the organization and a player, you know, that's on that team, that I am with the Red Sox. So yeah, it's crazy. Do you want to get into it, or do you want to talk a little Ohtani? I know you'd mentioned off air before we're coming on the show that Ohtani's hitting today.
Yeah,
we had his debut with pitching. People are going to have wild overreactions, whether he's good or he's bad. I take it with a grain of salt. He's here and he's healthy. That's all that matters.
We'll talk more when we get to the pitchers, but the, Trevor Bauer, I wish I could assign more value to his first spring start. I can't though, because like just, you know, logically, I'm just not able to say like a first spring start means anything at all, because I mean, you're basically going out there and no one has seen pitching in 6 months. It's like you're facing guys who are basically like, let me just see if I could swing a bat, let alone hit a ball, you know? So I'm not putting much into that whole Trevor Bauer first start, but oh man, I hope it's a sign of things to come.
Spring training.
If people didn't know,
Franco hitting homers. Yeah, I know. It's tough.
No, if people didn't know that Trevor Bauer had an amazing first spring start. If people out there listening didn't know, I think he threw like 25 of 26 balls for strikes and like struck out like six of eight people or something. I don't remember the exact numbers, but he had like one of those like spring starts. You're like, oh man, is he moving up draft boards now?
God, I hope
but
not.
Yeah, Ohtani. I was saying to you before that I can't believe the Angels are even allowing him to hit in spring training, especially this early. Like, there's, pitchers are still working on things. Like, God forbid for the Angels if, like, a spring training, like, know-nothing pitcher throws a ball inside and it hits Ohtani on the wrists or something. Like, I wouldn't be risking Ohtani right now in spring training as a hitter, but I don't know. The Angels game plan, according to them, is that they're going to basically have him be a pitcher and then maybe pinch hit later in games. So why even have him face live pitching right now? I don't know. It doesn't make much sense to me to have the Angels have Ohtani out there as a hitter, but I don't know. What's your thoughts? Anything?
Yeah, they're not going to DH him at all. I thought they were going to go with the 6-man rotation and that he would be available to pinch hit and pinch run in other situations. And then there would be scheduled games where he was going to DH. That's what I thought they were doing.
There's been so much.
I mean, it's been talk ad nauseum about this situation, and for good reason. It's very unusual. I know that Lance, my co-host of the Prospect Podcast, he personally feels this is the future of the game. You know, Brendan McKay, who was star hitter and pitcher at Louisville, first round pick this year of the Tampa Bay Rays. He feels that he's going to be doing the same thing. We'll see. We'll see if this clears a path for some of these two-way guys. There's a lot of players that get drafted every single year that are, legitimate prospects as pitchers, as hitters. We've seen guys make the transition like Rick Ankiel, to a hitter from a pitcher. We've seen Anthony Gose now go from a hitter to a pitcher, a lefty that throws, 95, 96 or whatever with a breaking ball. It'll be interesting to see. So I'm going to reserve judgment at this point. I've said my piece about it. I don't know what the heck the Angels are going to do. And if there's one organization that I'm not going to try to wrap my head around, at least from a managerial standpoint, it's the Angels and the sociopath. So I'm going to wait and see. I think he's going to get some at-bats. I think mostly he's going to be a pitcher. And I think that's where most of his value is going to come from. But it'll be cool when he hits the occasional home run, steals the occasional base, especially with that 80-grade speed. That's my take on it. Anything else you wanted to add on Ohtani? You want to get into this cornucopia of outfield talent, all these players that I feel we've already talked about in the top 10, plus another 30 because we're trying to hammer out the top 40 today.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's get into it.
All right, so let's go through the gospel, as I said, according to Gray. Here's your top 10. We've covered the top 9. Stop me at any point, Mr. Albright, if there's anything you want to add on any of these guys. Number 1, the be-all, end-all, the alpha, the omega, that is Mike Trout, easy peasy. Number 2, Bryce Harper. Number 3, Mookie Betts. Number 4, Giancarlo Stanton and all of his magical powers. Number 5, Chris Bryant. Number 6, J.D. Martinez. Number 7, George Springer. Number 8, the much-loved Cody Bellinger. Number 9, Charlie Blackmon. And then number 10 is Aaron Judge, who we haven't really covered, though seems like we just spent 5 minutes on him in the opening. So anything you wanted to add on the top 10 here, a lot of talent, I feel like, in the first 3 rounds with hitters this year.
I don't think there's – I mean, we went over all these guys in previous podcasts. So if people haven't heard what we thought on these guys, they can just go listen to the other podcast. But, yeah, nothing really to add on any of them at this point. JD finally signed to your beloved Red Sox.
Exactly. And said he was going to play right field, which it made me laugh because of the absolute size. It's an abyss in right field at Fenway Park. And they have a combination of probably the best defensive outfield in baseball. Benintendi's in left and could play center. I don't even know if he could play right. And I love Benintendi. He's athletic, talented as a defender. I'm not even sure he could play right. So JD Martinez, coming into Boston hot with the hot take on his right field ability. So that's
maybe because he broke his elbow last year, was it? So maybe
2 years
maybe
ago.
Maybe okay. Last well, year 2 years ago. Maybe his foot. So maybe his elbow and his foot have detached from his body, and they're gonna play short right, and he's gonna play deeper right. I don't know. JD Martinez is split in half.
Ball. Nice.
Here's the thing with JD Martinez. Maybe you've got a take because you're a homer. You're a Red Sox homer.
Oh,
but are we missing – there's a narrative here that – are we missing the fact that Red Sox didn't want to sign him for like almost a week because of some injury that we're not hearing about? And then like are we going to get to April and it's going to be like – actually, JD Martinez has got this problem with his knee. He's gonna have it scoped.
I know what it is. I heard it on the way home from work today. It's the foot that he had surgically repaired last spring that delayed the start of his season with the Tigers before he was traded to the Diamondbacks. There were some questions, some issues, some concerns with that surgically repaired, I believe it's his right foot or right ankle. So that's where the concerns are. Yeah, it's not great, but I will say this. The Red Sox were dead last in power last year. They needed a big thumper in the middle of that lineup. I like the fact that he's a right-hander. You know, this is probably the worst home run ballpark he's played in, though. So I do want to bring that up. And I think people always think Fenway, offense, sure, it's a great doubles park. Great park for BABIP, for your batting average on balls in play. It's not necessarily so great for homers. Detroit, though the dimensions are massive, is actually a great ballpark to hit in. I believe somebody from MLB, I think it might have been Derek Carty or somebody like that, was saying top six or seven over the last 5 or 6 years. So legitimate, good hitting elite ballpark. Then he went to Arizona pre-Humidor, and we know how good of a ballpark that was. And, I think that he'll probably hit for a high average. I think he's going to drive in a ton of runs. I don't know if the homer number might take a little bit of a knock. Maybe he doesn't get to 40 because of that wall, and he just hits an insane amount of doubles. I mean, Ortiz seemed to lead the league in doubles every year when he was having his big homer years. Though he was a lefty and the dimensions out there are a little different. But I don't want to get in a big diatribe here, but I do think it will knock down his homer numbers a little bit. But I think the overall counting stats, the batting average – all that's going to be good. You should be able to plug this guy into the lineup. The Red Sox should have a very good offense now. This is exactly what they needed from a team standpoint. But yeah,
yeah, I just want to say that
Mookie hits with leadoff. That's good.
That's all good. But like from a real baseball standpoint, I agree that JD is going to help the Red Sox. I mean, obviously he can't be. He's not going to be worse than Hanley and Mitch playing or trying to play 162 sure. games, but
Chris Young.
So Crispy. I think you're saying that like the ankle and or the foot or whatever. I don't know if we're missing something here for fantasy because like I could see the Red Sox signing this deal and being and having JD on their team because. Otherwise, who are they going out to get? Logan Morrison? I mean, they're or at this point, not even him because he just signed. But I mean, there's no like JD Martinez is the last jewel really left for on the hitting side of things. So the Red Sox, from a team standpoint, are probably happy to have him. But I don't know. I mean, what if we get to April and it's like, you know what? The foot's still really bugging me. I'm going to take 2 months. Get this thing right, and the Red Sox are like, that's fine. We only need you for the second half of the year anyway. So I don't know. I'm being, a bit of a downer on JD. I still like him. I'm being devil's advocate.
I think he's a Dombrowski guy, too. Like, I think this was their guy. I think this is who they always planned on signing. They played the market right because nobody was signing. And we saw, based on the return for some of these power-hitting – corner outfield types, even Marcell Ozuna, who we're about to move on to at number 11, didn't get that much of a return in comparison to Christian Yelich. I think you got to be able to play up the middle, the speed, some of those other elements in terms of what you get for a return, market-wise in terms of contracts, but also market-wise in terms of prospects and assets. It seems like those are the guys that are going for big money now is up the middle and pitching or even relievers. It seems like relievers are a harder asset than these corner hitting, or these power hitting corner guys. It's because of the way the game is that power is, not at a premium any longer, that it's such a surplus that, these guys are devalued a little bit, but
right. Anything, well, that's what I'm, I mean, that's what I'm concerned about with JD for fantasy purposes. Sure. I think, you know, if we're to say like, oh, the Red Sox are, you know, they're taking, you know, the Red Sox don't need him for 6 months, but if you're drafting him in the top 10 outfielders, you want him for 6 months. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You don't want JD Martinez for four months. So
especially even outside of like roto leagues, where if you're in like a head to head, you know, or a point situation where you don't want to fall too far behind in terms of the standings, that's a big part of it too. But before we get off track here, anything you wanted to add on Judge? I think we covered him, you know, extensively in the beginning. We said everything you wanted to say on Judge. I mean, is there anything you wanted to add before we jump into Ozuna here?
No, not really. I think Judge is just – he's a lot more risky than his ADP right now is saying he is. So I would use caution with him. But, yeah, I've said my piece on Judge.
Yeah, wild fluctuations in the drafts that I've done in terms of when Judge is going, you know, especially with redraft stuff. Obviously, Dynasty is a whole different animal. But I've seen him go as early as like 9 to 12. And I've seen him go as late as like 24, 25, 26, maybe even 27. So I think it just depends upon the room. I think there's a lot of players this year that are like that. One probably being Marcell Ozuna, a newly minted Cardinals outfielder, Marcell Ozuna. What are you feeling on Ozuna? Do you think he's a good pivot? Maybe if you don't want to invest in JD Martinez because of the foot concerns, or in Aaron Judge because of just the concerns of him actually repeating what he did last year?
No, Ozuna, I'm on board with Ozuna. Okay. I think he's, I'm all about him. I think he feels like he's on the verge of being Nelson Cruz for 7 years. Yeah. Like Ozuna, I would say Ozuna's probably, for a 27-year-old who seemingly just broke out last year, he's probably about as safe as you're going to get in the, the first little tier of outfielders that we're in. Like Ozuna, I feel like he's not going to give you steals, but he should give you 30 to 35 homers. He's going to be in a decent enough lineup. He should give you 100 runs, 100 RBIs. And he hit .312 last year, which was a little high on the BABIP. I would expect him probably a little bit closer to .280, but 35, 280, 100 hundredths, not bad at all, even without any speed. So, yeah, I like Ozuna. I think he's pretty polished considering, like, his – you know, he didn't seem it coming into last year, but I think he's really safe right now.
Yeah, and he's obviously still in a pitcher's park, but I think anybody that's leaving Marlins Park, you got to bump up just a little bit, even if it's only a couple of homers. I don't expect him to drop off at all. And I, like you said, I think he can repeat this for a long period of time because he's got that skill set. He's finally sort of matured into the player that we hoped he would be. I want to move along here, though, because we don't think we need to get caught up in guys like Ozuna. Everyone's going to draft him anyway. Really interesting player right here. I want to kind of package him together a little bit. Number 12, Starling Marte, obviously had the PED suspension last year. Things got off the rails. He's one of these guys that he's flash power. He's obviously has a ton of speed, hits for a good average typically, but he's never really like put it together and just had that monster like top 5, top 10 season that I think we kind of suspected when he first came up. And the other guy being Andrew Benintendi. I think they're similar players from the sense that they can give you sort of across the board statistics. Why Marte over Benintendi? Because I'm not sure that necessarily that's consensus.
Yeah, I just say that. I mean, we already discussed how JD is not really going to play right field, even though he has the want to.
Sure.
But how about that Red Sox outfield for fantasy? Betts, JD, and Benintendi. I wouldn't. You know what? It's not like some people will be like, occasionally I'll get a comment like, oh, do you want more than one player in the same lineup? And it's like, if the lineup's good, I don't care how many players I got. But Betts, JD, and Benintendi, I wouldn't mind having that on my fantasy team. I wouldn't kick that out of bed. You know what I'm saying there, Ralphie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all I heard was Benintendi in bed, and I immediately went to a happy place.
You had to mute out the skin slapping.
Oh no, I want you to hear it.
Okay.
We've heard worse in this podcast.
I hope that's an apple pie. Do you get that reference? I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I do.
Yeah, okay. Because I figured you get references from like 98 to about 2005. That's Ralph's time frame.
I get references. I just haven't seen the movies. That's all.
Okay. All right. No problem. Hey, take it easy, killer.
Hey, I'm angry. I'm upset. Now tell me about Starling Marte. Damn it.
All right. I mean, it's interesting you put them together as you did, because I don't really see them necessarily as the same player. No. I think Marte is going to be interesting on whether or not he can get over 30 steals again. I think that's where most of his value is going to lie. His power dipped off last year, even with the suspension. I don't know. See, you know, I know you're joking, but with the whole PEDS thing, I don't even know if these guys are doing it really to make themselves stronger as much as to be like, I'm playing 7 days this week.
Yeah.
I'm feeling sore as shit. I just want to put something on my body that's going to make me recoup so I can play again on Wednesday. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it is a strength thing. I think it's probably more a recuperation thing. But I think with Marte, you're likely – I mean, if you watch him and you look at his numbers on his – you know, like he's not really necessarily a 20-plus homer guy. I don't know if he's ever going to get there. In 2015, he flirted with 20 homers. He had 19 homers, probably his best year. He had 19 homers and 30 steals and a .287 average that year. But – I think his real value is going to come from his steals and potentially his average. I don't think he's probably not going to kill you in average with the potential of being, you know, maybe even a 290 to 305, you know, guy for average. Like there's the potential there, I think, for him to hit for a solid average. And it's at 29 years old. I think the real question mark probably is going to be his speed. Will he still have it? Last year, he appeared that he was still stealing bases. He wasn't, he's only caught 4 times in 25 attempts. So it appears like he's still able to run and steal bases. So, you know, as long as he gets 32 steals and chucks in 12 to 15 homers and a 270 to 285 average, you're getting your value as a top 12 outfielder. I think he's right there, and I'm not really concerned about the whole suspension on how, you know, whether or not that's going to be a problem for him. Like we saw with D. Gordon came back from suspension and he was fine. I don't think it's I think a lot of these guys are just doing it to recoup quicker. And then for Benintendi, I think he's a little bit, I don't know. I mean, I feel like you're more of the Red Sox, since you know your Red Sox so well, maybe you have a better idea of where his steals really are going to end up, because that's really like, I think he's a 2022 homer guy with maybe 25 homers. If he gets into some, he's a solid average, 280-ish average. But then the steals, last year he had 20 steals. Is he a 20-steal guy again? I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think where he's going to hit in that lineup, and I think they will send him. But I don't know. See, the problem is how much do things change under Alex Cora? Because he's coming from the Astros, and as we know, they don't necessarily send anybody other than Bregman, it seems like. So, yeah, I wonder about that a little bit. I wonder if that knocks his value down. I think his batting average is going to be higher. I don't know where he hits in the lineup necessarily, but I think it's still going to be in the top 6 or so. I don't know if he grows into a little bit more power. I think at times, because he's a lefty in Fenway Park, I think it saps his power. Once again, going back to that whole thing.
Did you not hear, or are you disregarding that Alex Cora said that he was going to, he said he wanted to run people more, like Jackie Bailey.
I've heard that. Well, I think it's a wait and see thing. You know, if we're looking at the organization he came from, they don't necessarily run a ton. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's more aggressive Maybe Cora just has wants to utilize the speed in this team. Maybe there's more speed in this team, ultimately, better base stealers. So maybe it's an element of their game that they're going to utilize. So like I said, I just want to bring it out there, throw it out there, play devil's advocate a little bit with the steals. But I think he's a 15 to 20 steal guy, just on ability alone. I think he can do it. And I think he can grow into 25 homer pop. I think in the right – if he was hitting in Coors or someplace, you know, Cincinnati, I think he might be able to hit 30 just because of, you know, he hits enough fly balls. He's got enough power. You know, he doesn't have crazy exit velocities or anything like that, but he makes good contact. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of guys like him. I kind of feel like now that Yelich and Kane are in Milwaukee, like I would rather have either of them than Benintendi or Marte.
Wow. I was looking at something. I'm sorry. I didn't.
Not worse.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just saw something. I didn't realize how few doubles Benintendi had last year. Because like you said earlier, Fenway is such a doubles park.
Especially for right-handers, and he's a lefty, so
yeah, I guess that's true. But you could hit a couple oppo doubles, like you could hit 20 easy without doing much harm. I'm surprised he only had 26 doubles last year. That seems low.
Yeah, I think it could ramp up a little bit too. And they were sitting more against lefties at certain points in time. It was his rookie season, you know. I'm willing to give him a pass. I think he's a player that continually gets better for the next few years while he has the athleticism. And then I think he'll have some injuries and things will taper off. I don't think he's going to be a Hall of Famer or anything like that. Sorry, Andrew Benintendi. But I think he's a very good hitter, going to be really productive because he gives you across the board fantasy value. But I don't know. I feel like Marte's a little high at 12, but I get it. I mean, he's a proven performer. So I want to jump into some of these power guys because I feel like I'd be going after more of these power bats. Next couple guys you have on the list are Justin Upton, Nelson Cruz, and even Rhys Hoskins a little bit. But you know what? I'm going to hold off on Rhys Hoskins. We'll pair him with Byron Buxton. Justin Upton, Nelson Cruz. Why Upton over Cruz? I mean, are you feeling the Angels? Do you think he's going to get a little Mike Trout bump on some of the counting stats or what?
I was trying to figure out why to be negative on Upton, and I didn't really come away with anything, to be totally honest. I was looking at his numbers, and I'm like, he did have, you know, he had moments where in his past where he was just god awful for month long stretches where if you go back like into the year before, he's had five of his last 6 months have been really solid. And then you go back the year before and he's had a solid eight of his last 9 months. So he's been productive now going on almost 2 years straight, minus a month. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty productive. He's been very productive while being that consistent over that stretch of time. So, yeah, I'm trusting Upton a little bit. And Upton versus Cruz really just comes down to a matter of whether or not you think Upton can steal 10 bases because their power runs RBIs are going to be pretty close. Cruz will give you a little bit more average, but he's not going to give you any speed at all. You're not going to get any steals from Cruz. And Upton stole 14 bases last year. I don't think he's really a 14 steal guy, but even if he steals 8 to 10 bases, that's still, you know, that's 8 to 10 bases Cruz isn't going to give you. So that was sort of my thought on why I went Upton over Cruz.
All right, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense on both fronts. Those are definitely two of the more dependable guys, I think, in this top 20. It seems like year in, year out, you kind of know what you're going to get from them. Obviously, you're going to get a bad slump from Upton, but you're telling me now that I'm not going to get that. I felt like he actually had two good years, so there you go. Number 16, Rhys Hoskins. We already went over him in the first base show. You know my feelings on Rhys Hoskins. I'm a big fan. Number 17, one of the more controversial players in the top 20. There'd be Byron Buxton. Some people love him. Some people hate him. I don't think there's anybody in between. It's kind of like, I'm going to take a shot on Buxton today. I think, like, you know you're going to draft Buxton someplace. You know you're not going to draft Buxton anywhere. So, Gray, what side of the fence do you fall on?
I think I'm going to draft him. I think I'm going to probably draft him and then be like, you know, like have drafter's remorse the next day and be like, oh man, I can't believe I have Buxton on my team. I'll never learn. I had him last year and he went 0 for the month of April. It was so miserable to own Buxton last year. Oh my God. And then I think I dropped him. And someone else owned him for his good second half.
Cram had him, I think. I can remember because he kept on making up gains when Buxton went bananas for a month and a half. And yeah, I remember.
I don't know. It's just so his good is so enticing that it's like, ah, man, 20 homers and 30 plus steals. And, you know, like last year he hit .253 over, you know, in 462 at bats. So he's capable of hitting .250 and 20 homers and 30 steals is really good. I mean, that's, you know, that is definitely like a guy who's it's a top 20 outfielder. I know though that if I get to May and he's hitting .175, I'm probably going to say I'm never owning Buxton again in my life. I might get to the point where I just have to like, I had to go to like the AA meetings for Buxton and just, or the BA, I guess, Buxton Anonymous, and just like, I can't, my name is Gray and I just cannot draft Buxton again. I'm sorry. I've done it to myself 2 years now. But yeah, you look at him and you're like, God, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me, but 20 homers and 30 steals is, that's basically what you would love to get that from Sterling Marte, for example, like 20 homers and 30 steals. You'd be like, oh man, if I can get that from Sterling Marte, I'd take that in a second. The problem is Buxton could hit .175, which he's shown he can. I mean, he's done it. You know, to be honest, I think I could even hit .175. I mean, I might have a shot at that. So yeah, there's major risk and there's solid reward. And I don't know, it's just a matter of like, at what point do you say like his risk? Like last year, his numbers are 16 homers, 29 steals, and a .253 average. I think if you say, okay, he's going to give you exactly that again, you probably don't draft him here. You want a bit more, but he's only 24 years old, and he could do a lot more. Like I'm saying, like he could do 20 plus homers and 30 plus steals and a .260 average. So, man. I'm not, you know, it's really like you got to know what you're getting into with Buxton. I mean, if you know what you're getting, I'm drafting them. I'm telling you, I'm not going to be happy necessarily about it, but I will.
Yeah. I think you're right on that. I know he's going to be staring me in the face in a draft board and I'm just going to end up biting the bullet and taking him. 'Cause you're going to have like a safe three or four rounds depending upon where he goes. But if he's anything before the fourth round, I'm not owning him anywhere. If he drops into like the early fifth round and he's sitting there and I already got my pitcher and I got my base with hitting, he's a guy I'll take a chance on if just for the speed. But yeah, he kind of reminds me of Carlos Gomez. I feel like that's the kind of player he is, where like he's got, you know, the speed, his defense is going to keep him in the outfield.
You know how great and Gomez power, was for man. Some of those years. I mean, I think that's a great analogy. I mean, Gomez was someone people were looking at in the top 20.
Yeah, exactly. I think that he's one of those guys. I think it's just, but you're going to have to take the good with the bad, and he's going to have stretches where you're like, I hate this guy. Then he's going to go bananas for 3 weeks, and you're going to be like, I love this dude. I need to own him every season for the rest of my life. Now, one guy that was like that is your number 19. I'm going to skip over number 18, Chris Taylor, who we already talked about. We covered him in second baseman. I think we talked about him for like 15 minutes on that show too. But number 19, that's Yasiel Puig. I have bought into Yasiel Puig. I've forgotten how to pronounce his name. I swore him off, and now I'm kind of coming back around again, and I have no idea what to think. Gray, help me out. why Yasiel Puig at number 19? I mean, you have some really good performers here in 20 to 25.
Yeah, I was looking at Puig as a guy who I didn't really necessarily go into the rankings thinking Puig was going to be someone I was going to be excited about. But the more I looked into him, I was like, you know what? His last year he had 28 homers, 15 steals, and a .263 average.
Yeah.
And there's nothing really jumping out at me that says he shouldn't not only be that good on the homers and steals, but he can easily be much better on the average. Like last year, he had a low BABIP for him. He could be I could see him being like a 310, 315 BABIP guy. But conservatively, even if he's a 300 BABIP guy, he's going to hit 270, 275. So 270, 275 with, 30 homers and 15 steals. It's hard not to like that, and he's going to be in a good lineup. The park obviously hasn't bothered him before. I don't know why it's going to bother him now. He's still only 27 years old. I feel like he's finally found his groove, as we saw, in the playoffs. He's starting to really enjoy playing in the States, and he's one of those guys where I'm like, Puig, I think could be a top 10 outfielder for the year. And I think he could be like a 35 homer, 15 steal, 280 guy. Like I'm really excited about Puig on, his walks almost doubled his walks last year. His walks went from 2016 to 2017, they went from 6.5 to 11.2. His strikeouts came down 3%. He hits a decent, nothing really screaming out in his peripherals that say like, his line drives, fly balls, ground balls are pretty even. He hits a decent amount of hard to medium contact. And he is also like his swings, like he swung at 13% less. He's swinging at less balls outside the zone. He's really starting to really come into his own, to be totally honest. I think Puig's a guy that people are going to be like, wow, I'm surprised Puig wasn't, talked about more in the preseason, because he's really like, he's breaking out.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's almost like he's like the major league version of like a post-hype guy, where like all the hype was on him, after his like half seasons, and when he showed up and training camp or spring training went absolutely bananas that one year. Maybe I think the hype is just subsided and people just aren't as into him because there's some other players in that team that people are more into, Cody Bellinger being one. But yeah, I think you're right. I think people are going to get a good, based on your rankings, if they follow your rankings, people are going to get a good price on Puig, and a lot of your followers are definitely going to get a lot of Puig.
Do you love watching your fantasy players score a winning touchdown? Now imagine you can actually call that touchdown play. The Fan-Controlled Football League is putting play calling in the hands of fans, with real professional football players running the action. From drafting rosters to voting on trades, the FCFL Fan is one part coach, one part GM, and one part owner. This is all done through the Fan Token. Fans earn fan tokens each time their vote yields a successful outcome. The more fan tokens a fan earns, the greater power that's attributed to their future votes. Visit fcfl.io. to learn how you can take control.
But you know what I'm going to get a lot of this year? I'm going to get a lot of RotoWear shirts. I have a ton of RotoWear shirts. I think I have 8 or 9 now. He's dropping new designs every week. Just put out the 80 grade. If you see it, it's like a tally mark all the way up to 80. Says grade. If you don't know what 80 grade is, you don't really know about baseball. But that's on the scouting grading scale. Goes up to 80, blah, 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 blah. You should be going on to RotoWear.com. And you should be buying t-shirts using promo code SAGNOFF, S-A-G-N-O-F. You get 20% off all of your purchases there. Also should be following Kenny on Twitter at Kenneth_Cashman and follow at RotoWear. He's doing tons of fun games, putting together lineups, pitching staffs, all these cool interactive games on Twitter. And he's giving away t-shirts if you win. And I think he's giving away like 3 or 4, seems like a week. So definitely follow him there if you want to get a free shirt. You should be buying some anyway, using our promo code SAGNOFF to get that 20% off. Gray, anything you want to add on for our number one sponsor, RotoWear?
No, you know how I feel about Kenny and the RotoWear shirts. I love them. They're my favorite shirts. Every time I pull one, because see, Coogs does the laundry and she puts my clothes back. I married my mom basically, but she puts my clothes back and I pull out whatever shirt's on top. That's that's what goes into styling Gray on the daily. And I'm always excited when the first shirt I pull out is RotoWear, because I'm like, oh, I'm wearing RotoWear today. It's going to be a good day.
The shirt's going to make love to you. And you can use promo code SAGNOFF to get 20% off. All right, let's jump into the next 20 outfielders here. Chris Davis is your number 20. Why don't you jump into him a little bit, and then we'll move on to the two newly minted Brewers. But what are your thoughts on Crash this season?
I was someone in the comments brought up a good point, saying how, you know, Aaron Judge, going back to Aaron Judge again, not to beat a dead horse, but Aaron Judge – and Chris Davis, really? I mean, that different? I don't see that big a difference either. I agreed with that commenter. I think Chris Davis is basically Aaron Judge, like maybe, I don't know, 30 picks later, 40 picks later. I don't know exactly when Chris Davis is going, but I'm sure he's going after Aaron Judge. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Chris Davis probably, you know, he might flirt with a 230 average. Hopefully I have him projected for 245. So hopefully he can stay around there. But yeah, I mean, yeah, 40 homers, 245 average, and the runs and RBIs that he's going to get being on the A's. So, you know, you kind of know what you're getting with Chris Davis, with a K.
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing with Judge is just the better ballpark, better lineup. But I see what your point is there. Let's move on to these Brewers, because I definitely want to talk about these two guys. Number 21 being Christian Yelich, and then number 22 being Lorenzo Cain. I got to tell you, since these guys have been added to the Brewers, now that they're in Milwaukee, I want to own both of them. I think I'd bump them up even. Did you consider bumping them up? Did you bump them up in your rankings? I can't remember.
I did. Yeah, I bumped them up. I bumped them up like 5 spots. I bumped them from not feeling them to, I mean, not drafting them and not feeling them to, I'm going to draft them and I'm liking them now. Yelich, especially the more the more I think about with Yelich, he's in a place where the Brewers love to run. I mean, everyone steals bases on the Brewers. I don't, you know, Craig Counsell, holding the mic in a different fashion is just like run, you know. I don't remember Counsell really being that big of a steals guy himself, but he apparently appreciates a good stolen base. So I think Yelich and Cain both are gonna run for sure. And you can't get Chase getting the humidor outside of Coors, you can't do much better than Miller Park for power. So there's a chance here. Yelich, you know, the problem with Yelich, I think, is kind of anecdotal and a little bit. He's anecdotally, I look at him and I'm like, this guy can't hit 25 homers. I mean, just you look at him, he kind of looks like he belongs in Little League, and you're like, hey, you're lucky if he gets 20 homers. I don't buy it. I don't buy him getting 25 plus homers and stealing 20 bases. But Miller Park's good, and I don't know. I mean, maybe Yelich just runs into a monster year. It really, at this right now, after the trade to the Brewers, it wouldn't surprise me anymore. I didn't love Yelich in Miami, but I do like him in Milwaukee. I think he's probably he's he hits too many ground balls probably to really like shock people with power. I really honestly in my gut don't feel like he's going to hit for more than 20 homers because he just hits so many ground balls. But yeah, I mean, Miller Park assisting him, maybe he gets into it. I think he's definitely going to have a valuable year. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, his year is about as valuable as Benintendi, like pretty similar probably.
Yeah, I actually would draft Yelich and Kane over Benintendi and Marte. I feel them. And the big thing with them is, as you mentioned, you alluded to it, they're number one in steal attempts per game. I believe they were the only team in MLB that averaged one steal attempt per game or better. So that's a huge bump up from the Marlins, certainly for Yelich. And I think it's going to be a bump up for Kane. He's going to run a little bit more. He wanted to go to Milwaukee. I don't know if you read some of those stories. That was the organization that originally signed him and developed him. He was then, you know, moved to Kansas City. And I think that, you know, potentially we could be talking about two guys that finish within the top 25, you know, of hitters if from that outfield. And I don't know. I mean, they both get a power boost coming from, you know, cavernous pitcher's parks, and they run and they hit for average. I don't know. Like, what's the downside with either of these guys? I guess with Kane, it's injuries, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kane feels like we've seen the best of Kane already. And even the best of him was, you know, 15 homers under 30 steals, which wasn't bad. Yeah. It was in Kauffman. You're right. Kane's surprisingly going to be 32 years old. So he's on the upper side of, you know, stealing 20 bases if he does it.
He still moves though. Sprint speed. He's a top guy. Like he can still run.
Yeah. No, I'm not arguing. I like both of them. So I'm not.
Come on, Gray. Bump him up in your rankings. You underrated him. It's like you have a Brewers fan on the podcast.
I know. I should get a Brewers guy to host this thing. I never thought of that. I think, you know, with Yelich and Kane and Benintendi, like I don't know off the top of my head where they are in my top 100/top 500, but these guys, I mean, they're not really like we've talked about, you know, it feels like, you know, like Benintendi was like 15 minutes ago and like five or six rankings before. So I think he's much better. But in the big picture, these guys are all getting drafted around the same time. Like if someone takes Benintendi and Yelich is there and it's my pick, I'm taking Yelich, you know, or if he fits into my game plan, like at this point, I'm kind of looking a little bit at, you know, how my team is looking. If I have, you know, if I drafted Giancarlo, I might want Yelich just because of, you know, to reunite the Marlins. No, not to reunite the Marlins, but to, you know, just to balance out Giancarlo's power with a little bit more average and steals. So, you know, I kind of, you know, I'm hedging a little bit, but Yelich and Benintendi, even though they're separated by six outfielders, they're pretty close. They're not that different, right. In my mind.
I think from like 10 to probably where we just covered, yeah, any of those guys could, you know, throw the cards up in the air.
Right, totally. Yeah, and you can see them and like, you know, so you get one of these you know, one of these dreaded outfielder runs in the draft, and you know, Yelich is gone, Benintendi's gone, Kane's gone, Hoskins is gone, Billy Hamilton's gone, and then Rudy drafts a closer, and you're like, huh, wait, what? And then and then Pollock's gone, and then Gray drafts Acuna, and you're like, wow, he really reached on that.
I can't wait till this plays out in front of me and I don't end up with Acuna again this year. But hey, let's move on because Acuna's all about right, to come yeah. up. But let's okay. move on. Number 23 is the guy that I drafted 1 year in an RCL. I haven't gone back to the well on it at all. He drives me insane. Number 23 is Billy Hamilton. Are you a guy that owns Billy Hamilton anywhere? Because I got to tell you, like I said, I owned him once and I haven't since just because it's just steals and I feel like nothing else. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. No, I feel you on that. I've had moments. I I believe I've had Hamilton at least once. I know I drafted D. Gordon in the year he was suspended, and that really killed me. I had Trey Turner last year, and it's like some of these guys, like Turner and Gordon, I don't know, for whatever reason, maybe it's the middle infielder thing, but they don't bother me as much as Billy Hamilton kind of does. Like, he really – he kind of brings steals and nothing else. You're like, oh, man, just, like, get an 0-for-3 with a walk and steal a base at least. I mean, it's like all these 0-for-4s are killing me, Billy Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's he is a category winner, though. I mean, you draft him and you really don't have to worry about anything else. So it's that's the allure, you know? It's like you're – you take Billy Hamilton and you don't even have to try and get 5 to 7 steals from your like third outfielder. You're just like, I don't need anything. I just need Billy Hamilton for steals and nothing else. So yeah, it's, I mean that on that, you know, it's all right. I'm not really, that's not really how I build a team usually, because then Billy Hamilton gets hurt and now you have no steals at all. And you're like, ah, oh, man, this, my team's really screwed now. We actually, funny side note, in my NL only draft with CBS, hosted by the CBS guys, Billy Hamilton, I have him in my Rudy. I use Rudy's NL only rankings, so Rudy has him for $18 in NL only, and he went for $36. It's like, really? I mean, you really got to be pot committed to owning Billy Hamilton if you're going to $36 for him.
Yeah, wow. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll change my opinion. I don't want to give up too much here, because you'll be studying what I'm saying, obviously. But anyway, number 24, AJ Pollock. I don't know, man. And with the humor, I am very nervous about AJ Pollock. I don't think I want to own Pollock anywhere. Why is he number 24?
Well, yeah. I mean, I will say about AJ Pollock, I would draft him. I'll say that. I think he's in. You know, conservatively, he's probably 18 homer, 22, 23 steal guy with a decent average, decent runs, okay RBIs. So it's not bad. But I will say this, though, if he has a bad year this year, his 2015 huge breakout is going to look so anomalous to it's going to look so different. trying to find the right word. The year when he had 20 homers and 39 steals is going to seem like such an outlier compared to the rest of his career.
Oh yeah.
You know, if like it doesn't happen this year again, like people are going to be like, damn, what was going on in 2015? Because he never even came close to that again. So I don't know.
Are you chewing on boba?
I am. I'm addicted. I'm fucking addicted to boba. I can't stop. I thought you were going to talk longer on Pollock, and I got a mouthful of boba.
I know. Oh, I
have to go see like a 89-year-old Asian medicine doctor and have him take the curse of the boba off of me, because I am addicted. I can't get enough.
Well, I know who I'm addicted to, and that would be number 25 in your rankings. That would be Ronald Acuna. How about that segue? Big guy, what's up? Anyway, I've ranked Acuna number one in my prospect ranks over on Razzball. He's an easy number one for me, and I think that he's probably the top rookie this year. If he gets enough at-bats, I don't know. You know, there was some rumors about some Corey Dickerson signing. That didn't happen, which was a good thing. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on Acuna Gray? Hold on.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering what your take was on Acuna. And I'm not saying that because my mouth is full of boba again. I'm not deflecting. but because you're the prospect guy. So, I mean, When I ranked Acuna and I projected him, you know, I projected him for 17 homers and 21 steals, which is pretty – actually, it's pretty conservative compared to a lot of people's projections. Like Zips and Steamer are even they're even more aggressive than I am for his projection. So, I mean, I was kind of surprised at how low Acuna is in everyone's rankings that I've seen. Like, you know, ESPN, CBS, Yahoo, everyone's rankings have Acuna way lower than I have him. So I was actually I was surprised by that because 17 homers and 21 steals and a good average. It's kind of, I mean, it's kind of top 25 outfielder. I don't know.
Yeah,
Am I crazy?
No, I think he can be from day one, and his defense is good enough that it's gonna play. I mean, he's got 70 grade defense, and if we're going off of what Baseball America ranked, he has a 60 hit tool, which is very good, a 70 power and 70 speed. You never see 70s. Just for reference, you never see 70s. Acuna is the goods. This guy is as good of a prospect as we've seen since, you know, Correa or Trout or one of those sort of guys. He's sort of next level. I don't worry about the – I think his problem with his ADP is that he came the year after Yoan Moncada. And I don't think Moncada is a bust by any stretch of the imagination, but I think there's growing pains there, and there was some things that sort of needed to happen. I don't think it's going to happen with Acuna. He's more aggressive at the plate. He's going to come up. He's going to hit from day one. I'd be shocked if he hits under 275. It's just a matter of the Braves call him up. I mean, he's got the talent to break camp. It's just a matter of what happens. I know the early spring training game I watched, he struck out a couple of times, but it's early, and I'm not too worried about it. I think the cream's going to rise to the top. If he's not up at the beginning of camp, he's going to be up by May 1st, and I think we're going to get a full season of Acuna. Unless sometime in the next few weeks the Braves say otherwise, but reading the tea leaves, based on the kind of player he is, based on the fact that I really don't think the NL East is very good outside of the Washington Nationals, I think the Braves could compete a little earlier than we think. We'll see if that happens. Probably depends upon the pitching that they have as a stopgap.
The Phillies might surprise people.
I think they're just as good as the Phillies. I think they can be better than the Phillies because I think they can get even more pitching that can come up over the next few months. But they're so deep in terms of talent. So it will be interesting. I think that lineup is going to be pretty good once Acuna's in there. You got Albies, you know, and Ciarte's very good, and of course Freddie Freeman. So,
My thought on Acuna's ETA is sort of like what we saw with Chris Bryant a few years ago when he came up towards the third week of April. Like I think Acuna is going to be up April. I don't picture them keeping him down until June. So. That's where I'm at with why I have him ranked so high. I'm thinking he's gonna be up for 120-ish games.
Yeah, and a year from now it's gonna be Vlad Guerrero Jr. You're gonna be all over. I'm telling you right now. I'm making the call. Gray's gonna fall in love with Vlad Guerrero Jr. He's easy to fall in love with. Number 26, we already covered. That's Whit Merrifield. We covered him in the second base rankings. I think we talked ad nauseum about him as well. I want to move on to number 27 here. For all the amazing fans out there, Yoenis Cespedes, can you say his name correctly? I'm kind of in on Cespedes this year. I feel like he was all built up last year. The ADP was huge. Now you're going to get the discount. He had a tough year. He was hurt. He's another year older. The skills are still there, though, Gray. What are you thinking with Cespedes?
Yeah, I think Cespedes is probably, to stick with the Cuban theme, I think he's probably Puig minus the speed. I think Cespedes is likely 30 homer, 285 hitter with the runs and RBIs are going to come with that. The Mets won't necessarily be good. I think the only thing holding back Cespedes is probably going to be his health. So if he's healthy, I have no problem with Cespedes. I think he's probably going to be one of those guys that you draft and you're not necessarily overly excited, but then when you own him, you're like, yeah, it's a solid number two outfielder. You could pair him with just about anyone and you'd be like, yeah, I mean, it's a nice 30 homer, 285 hitter. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, if you get him for a full season, he's going to put up the power numbers. Now we get some interesting names. So I want to bunch a couple of these guys together now. Number 28, Eddie Rosario. Number 29, Joey Gallo, who we already sort of went over. Number 30, Trey Mancini, who we already sort of went over. And then 31, Tommy Pham, which you are very low on Tommy Pham. Against the room and the consensus, which is more of a statement that you're not going to own Tommy Pham this year. But What do you see from Rosario that you're higher on him, and what do you see from Pham that you're lower on him? And if you have anything to add with Gallo or Mancini, please do.
Yeah, I think Rosario is – he's being so underrated as of right now. I think even – I mean, I wrote a sleeper post about him back in December – and it didn't move the needle, as they say. He's still really underrated. You know, last year he had 27 homers and 9 steals. He was caught a lot, but whatever. And he hit for a .290 average. The .290 average wasn't necessarily with a high BABIP. He's probably closer to a 300. BABIP, which would take his average down maybe about 15 points, maybe 5, maybe 10 points. He's probably a .280 hitter with 30 homers and some steals, like not 9 because he was caught a lot, like I said, but maybe 5 steals. So that isn't really, I mean, it's not really that different than Cepeda's. I mean, I just basically said the stats for Cepeda's again for Rosario. I mean, that's more or less who he is, though. I mean, he's a 30 homer, couple steals, and a decent average. The Twins, you know, Rudy texted me yesterday when they got Logan Morrison, and he's like, the Twins lineup actually is pretty deep. And I don't necessarily disagree.
No, it's not. It's good.
The offense won't be that awful in Minnesota. I think Rosario is going to be right in the middle of it. Might be hitting third or fourth. Depending on what they do with Sano, and depending on if Sano accidentally eats his bat rather than using it at the plate.
He's big.
Sano accidentally ate Eddie Rosario, and then your whole team's screwed. But I think Rosario is really underrated, and Pham I feel like is overrated. On the reverse, Pham feels like one of those guys where you get like halfway through the season and he's got 12 homers and 8 to 10 steals or 12 steals. And you're like, not so good. Oh my God. I got a boba stuck in my throat now.
Oh God.
Boba is going to be the death of me.
Literally. I think it's the fact that you're saying negative things about Tommy Pham.
Boba's
counteracting. The Boba's a big fam. He's a big
fan supporter. We're not fam. I think he's going to be less than inspiring over a course of a full season. I don't know. I'm not feeling fam at all. Actually, by the time this podcast posts, there might be a chance that Pham has a Schmohawk post on the website. He could potentially be number two tomorrow or today, actually, when people are listening to this, depending on, if something happens at spring training, I might have to go over that instead. But yeah, there's a serious chance Tommy Pham might be listed as a Schmohawk as of, the airing of this podcast.
Yeah, he definitely made some approach changes. He had the whole eyesight thing. He was healthy for a full season. I don't know. I mean, he's tough because there's certainly some numbers there. You bring up the ground ball rate. Obviously, his BABIP was like 368. It was like insane. But, he does spread the ball around. He hits the ball on the ground. He runs well. So his batting average on balls in play should be higher. I don't think he's going to hit, 300 whatever again. And I think he's.
You're a prospect guy. What do you think of that? I think there's a strong chance Pham could be replaced by Bader by the middle of the season. What do you think of that?
I actually think they have a couple other guys that I'm going to be hyping up a ton in my St. Louis post and probably making my top 200 for sure, maybe the top 100. One being in particular, Jose Adolis Garcia, who's the younger brother of Adonis Garcia. Former third baseman.
Hopefully he's better than him. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he is. I know that the prospect guys that gotten a look at him really like him. He had very good numbers at AA and AAA last year. Hits for power. He runs, gets, 55, 60 grades in the power and the run.
Does he go by the nickname Jag?
No, he does not go by the nickname Jag. Should he? Yeah, he could. Maybe he will. I don't know.
Maybe he will now.
We'll get it going. It sounds great. I like it.
And now it's done.
There you go.
And now we did it.
Perfect. Anyway, There's some other guys there. Bader being one. The other being Tyler O'Neill. I really like Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah,
Dexter,
I do too.
Dexter Fowler is going to be healthy for a full season. So there's still a lot of bodies. Ozuna.
I wouldn't go that far about Dexter Fowler.
Oh, come on.
I
mean, let's hope maybe. He's healthy for a full season. Let's hope he's healthy for a full season. But he's healthy.
Let's hope healthy he gets right April healthy. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe that's where he finds some playing time. But yeah, there's plenty of options there if Pham falters. I know I have some friends who are Cardinals fans that have sold me on Pham a little bit. But there's some skills there. I don't think he's going to completely fall off the table. Like you say, 185 in April. I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen. I think he's going to play. I just don't know if it's going to be, you know, top 10 production on a per-game basis the way he was last year. I mean, his numbers were crazy. But anyway, let's move into somebody who is definitely on the downstroke. That would be 32 in your rankings, Andrew McCutchen. Now with the Giants, no longer the
I think
Dread
that was
Pirate.
A Parliament song, wasn't it, on the downstroke?
Yeah, get up for the downstroke. Everybody get up. Absolutely, I know my Parliament. But yes, what do you think about Andrew McCutchen, man? He's old. I don't want him on my team, but what are you thinking?
He's old. I don't want him on my team.
Not in that ballpark.
Yeah,
man.
I feel like kind of the same. I haven't liked McCutchen for a few years. He bit me in the ass a little bit last year by not liking him. He had a solid year last year, but yeah, I mean, he's, you know what you're getting with McCutchen at this point, like, 24 homers, 7 to 10 steals, 270 ish average. He'll probably be fine. He'll probably do exactly that and have decent counting stats. So yeah, I mean, I don't totally hate him anymore because I feel like his ADP's come down a little bit since maybe last year or the year before when his ADP was really crazy. I think he's okay. He doesn't really excite me all that much, but PNC wasn't exactly a hitter's park, so AT&T. Isn't great either, but maybe there's not that big of a drop off because of the park change and everything. I feel like you kind of know what you're getting with McCutchen.
Yeah, he's gonna feel the electricity of the Bay Area, man. He's just gonna start hitting homers, dude.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah, dude.
Exactly. Number 33 is his former teammate Gregory Polanco. What do you think about Polanco, man? He's somebody that you've been high on for many, many years. Now he's healthy. He's in the best shape of his life. If you've seen his workouts, Gray, he was in the Dominican Republic with the battle ropes. He's going bananas. What do you think about Polanco this year?
The old the BSOHL, the best shape of his life. I think it says more about Polanco than I don't think he meant to reveal as much as he did by saying, you know, how he's in the best shape of his life and how he's so excited to play on a team that is obviously purposely tanking. Like suddenly Polanco's come to play when no one else on the Pirates gives a fuck. It's like, where were you for the last 3 years, Polanco? All of a sudden you want to play. I don't know. He strikes me as a guy who's like now he's all pumped up, but he kind of strikes me as a guy a little bit like he doesn't give a fuck. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of Hanley Ramirez and Gregory Polanco.
Yeah,
but I like the
right?
price tag this year. I like the price tag. I'm gonna gamble on him. 34 is Ryan Braun. Do we really have to break down Ryan Braun?
I feel like everyone knows him.
We know Ryan Braun. So anyway, let's go through these next few guys. 35, Carlos Santana, we covered him with first baseman. Matt Olson, we covered him with first baseman. Ian Desmond, number 37, we covered him with first baseman. Last three guys here I want to talk about because I think they are very interesting players. One being a complete floor guy, and then one being an up-and-comer potentially, and then number 40 overall, is Domingo Santana, who is interesting as well because you have him kind of low.
I had Domingo Santana like 15 spots higher. I had him in the I believe I had him like around 17 overall for outfielders. I had him much higher than I have him now. I lowered him perhaps prematurely because of the Yelich-Kane move. Braun now says he's going to play first, which, you know, if there's anything to talk about with Braun, it's like, is he really playing first? I don't know.
Wow,
I mean,
that'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, I I mean, I believe that the Brewers want him to play first. I believe he wants to play first. I just don't know if he's really going to play first. So I moved Domingo Santana down because now they have two legitimate outfielders instead of him. You know, where before it was kind of like Broxton with a Thames, Hernan Perez,
Brinson Lurkin, yeah.
So there was a little more iffy with Domingo Santana in the forefront of their outfield. Now with Yelich and Kane, I'm not sure if Domingo Santana is really going to see the 575 at bats that I expected from him when I had him, you know, up 10 or so spots in my outfielder rankings. I still like him. I still think, you know, he's a guy who's probably coming at a little bit of discount, either for the Yelich Kane situation or just because people just don't know him as well. I think he's got solid power and speed. If he got into 575 at bats, he could easily challenge like you know, Justin Upton for stats, like 30 plus homers, 15 steals, 265 average. That's Sunday Santana can do that sort of thing, and he did it last year. So I like him a lot. I just concerned that he might get squeezed on playing time, and you don't want a guy, you don't want to draft a, you know, top 15 outfielder and have him benched once a week, even, you know, you kind of want to see a guy who's on the field all the time. So that was my reservation with Domingo. And Mazzara, I wrote a sleeper post on Mazzara, so I'm all about Mazzara. I think even though he is still very young, he's still only 22 years old. He kind of needs to show something. I mean, he's hinted at it, but he hasn't really shown it completely. And, you know, his big drawback is he doesn't really have much speed at all. So, your best case scenario is probably Ozuna. Your worst case scenario is, you know, 20 homers and no steals. And you're like, yeah, I'm dropping him.
He's so bad against left-handers. Like, I was looking at the numbers today as I was doing some prep, and against righties, he's very good. I mean, he's had two seasons at, you know, entered the season at 20 and then 21 last year. You know, he's going to be 22 right now, going to be 23 late in April. But, you know, two 20-homer years. He had 100 RBIs last year. Not many players have done that, you know, under the age of 24 in the history of baseball. But his numbers against left-handers are astronomically bad. Like, you know, his OPS is like 600. His strikeouts go up. His walks go down. His ground balls skyrocket against left-handers to 60%. It is absurd. So there is definitely an issue there with the same side platoon splits with Mazzara. But
it's almost like if you could have, like, you know, Mazzara in the majors versus righties, and then he goes to the minors and faces lefties to get better. Because I feel like the talent could be there eventually, but you're right. Yeah. He has struggled against lefties.
He's so young. It's tough to write him off because he's so young. Yeah, he's completely played so much for as young as he is. And
there is something like awful. I think in, I want to say like in the last 20 years, I looked at this for one of the posts I wrote. There was something like, you know, maybe say there's 15 guys. I don't know exactly, but say there's 15 guys who have been in the majors at 21 years and younger over the last 20 years. There's been 15 players, and I think only one of them has been a dud. Like, if you're up at 21, you are going to be good at some point. It's just a matter of when.
Exactly. That was the whole thing with you know, Rafael Devers last year. But the last guy I want to mention here is somebody that I actually really like as a player, and I know you had him on your RCL team last year, and at times he's frustrating not to own because I feel like he's like the perfect glue guy, and that's Ender Inciarte. Gives you not much in the way of power, almost none, but not a complete negative. I mean, he's not D. Gordon. Scores a ton of runs, had, you know, 200 hits last year. He plays every day. Good defense, can keep him in the lineup. Tons of contact, good average, runs, gets you some steals. What are you thinking with Enciarte? Because I really like Enciarte.
Can I be completely honest? I think I have Ender Enciarte at 39 overall for the outfielders because I did own him last year. I think I was so sold on him after owning him that I was like, I love this guy. I mean, he is like exactly like you say. He is such the glue guy. I mean, he is like the guy you just send out there for 155 games a year. He gets you 10 to 12 homers. He gets you 20 steals. He hits around 300. And you're like, you know what? I don't necessarily care that he hasn't hit a home run in 3 weeks. He goes 2 for 5 every day. With a run. I mean, he's always... Yeah, I mean, he's always doing – like, it feels like he's the kind of guy who's on your team and he's always doing something. It's like – it sounds like – what is that, Dr. Dre? He's always into something.
I don't know. I was looking at – I think it is Snoop. But I was looking at his monthly splits just in terms of batting average. He started out slow in April, but he had his best power month that month. He hit 4 homers in April, but he hit .230.
I think that was because I picked him up. I think probably I want to say T Hole dropped him. I want to say it's T Hole. I picked him up in April. I didn't draft him. I picked him up and then I held him because I knew if you have a guy, you gotta realize he's not a guy you necessarily team up on your he's not necessarily a guy you put on your fantasy team with, you know, Yelich and D Gordon and Billy Hamilton. Like, there's a time and a place for Ender and Sarte. You don't want a guy like Ender who's going to be with other guys who don't hit homers. So, I mean, you got to have the right team for him, but on the right team, like if you team him up with like say Justin Upton, that's a solid. You're looking at like 35 steals maybe and 40. You're looking at like 60 homers, 35 steals, and a .280 average combined for two players. I mean, that's really good.
Yeah, I think he's a good pairing for like a Bellinger Judge team too. And the other thing is I'm going through the months here. So .230 in April and a little bit of March. And May, .336. He hit .336 again in June. Played 28 games in both months. So he plays every day. July, 24 games because the All-Star break, .269. So he's down a little bit there, whatever. Back at .362 in August, .272. So, you know, between the two halves, he hit .302 in the first half, .306 in the second. That's an incredibly consistent player. And if you're in a format that values consistency like head-to-head, he's a really nice piece to have just because he can give you that batting average. And I feel that with all the strikeouts in the game and the aggressive – you know, sort of three true outcome approach of a lot of these hitters, it's nice to have a guy like him to raise your baseline. So, great, we did it. We went through all of these guys in an hour and
465 minutes.
Yeah, no, an hour and 20 minutes. It's actually not too bad. We've gone longer on 20 positions before, so I think we did a good job. Of course, half these guys were covered in other shows, but I won't. I'm gonna pat us in the back.
I can't wait to see how long our 41st outfielder through 135th outfielder takes. We got 85 outfielders to still cover, so that'll be an interesting podcast next week.
Yeah, it's going to be a marathon. I think we'll just live stream it and fall asleep.
It'll be like Dan Carlin's The History of Whatever He Does.
Exactly. So let's save some time then, and let's wrap this show up. Gray, another great week here on the Razzball Podcast.